This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Right on the other side of this computer is a sauna, which I spent about an hour in today, just schwitzing like an oikos. Let me tell you.
Out of paper, out of stock, there's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly. For your business paper needs, or Dunder Mifflin, the people purses paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people purses paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people purses paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and debt consolidator, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin Janes. I'm a shipping merchant who raises fancy dogs.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
Boys, I'm several drinks deep on vacation here in Santa Cruz, California. I don't have a drop board for you because I'm on the road again. And all the haters who are, I'm talking to Thaddeus in the Piney Woods of West Texas, who's like, don't do your episodes without drops anymore. Well, I'm here to tell you, I got a life to live. And there's no drops today, but I am here and liquored up for your listening pleasures.
And thank you. Thank you for taking a break from your trip to
You're
be
welcome.
Here.
It's not a break, man. It's a feature.
Yeah.
Certainly is. Well, every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week we'll be talking about the episode Money, the Superfan Cut, which is now out on Peacock. And then we'll go to the conference room and we'll discuss whether or not Creed has been trying to rope Jim in on a criminal scheme. And will we, the MSPC, once and for all admit that deleted scenes are canon? We shall see. We shall see. And then we'll finish up with some listener-provided trivia sent to us by John from Texas. Anything else before any other announcements we need to make, gentlemen?
No, I just want to, give the floor to Alex. This is his favorite episode, so I want to make sure has an opportunity to open the show.
I appreciate that, Edwin. Thank you. This is my favorite episode of The Office. Now, I've been saving watching the Superfan Cut until we did this, and I didn't think it could get better, but it did. And let me tell you why it's my favorite episode. At no point in The Office is anyone dealing with, like, basics of living, you know, like shelter, food, supply, like... This one is the only one that touches on that when, like, Michael's out of money and frantically, like, he's in a free fall in this episode. The walls are closing in like he's Luke Skywalker in the trash pit this entire episode. Mm-hmm. Something about this episode deals with realism, real things in such a great way compared to for me, the rest of the show, which is Michael's money problems, Dwight's inability to get over Angela. And then at the same time, you have Jim and Pam's love just like blossoming like a beautiful flower throughout this episode. There's all these things going on simultaneously. The writing is so sharp. This one's directed. I don't know if it's written by Toby, but it's directed by Paul Lieberman.
It is. I didn't do my my normal intro, but
Give me the spiel. Give me the spiel.
Written in season 4, episode 7 and 8. Written and directed by Paul Lieberman, and it aired on October 18th, 2007. But yes, you're correct.
There you go. I don't know why. There's something about the visit to Shroot Farms, Michael working another job where everything he wants in a job is there for him, which is like his coworkers like him. They're inviting him out to dinner. They're inviting him out to beers. they're hanging on his every word. There's not a lot of episodes where it's just like him and Jan in their relationship, being in a relationship, you know, like obviously Dinner Party's the marquee one for that. But this is a little less in your face about it. And there's just every element of this episode I love. It's always been my favorite episode. And watching the Superfan Cut only deepened my conviction that I am correct, that this is not the funniest episode, but the best. Dinner Party's the funniest episode. It's not the best. For my money, I'll take money.
Well said. Well said. No, I agree with you. I love this episode. And
I know you agree with me because you fucking took this in the first in our episode draft.
Episode two.
Way back when. Yeah, episode two, and I'm still not over it.
I don't regret it for a second. It was a good pick.
It's a good pick. Yeah,
I agree. I mean, I think that this episode has a lot of heart, which is really nice. And it's a two.
It does.
It's a two-parter, so there's a lot going on.
If I remember correctly, at the beginning of that draft, Sean took money, and we all laughed, and then Sean said, Alex, was that on your list? And Alex said, that was my list.
that was my franchise starter. Yeah. Like, I was like, as long as I get that episode, role players, I'm fine. That was my LeBron James in 2003.
I think you make a really good point, though. I think a lot of sitcoms are guilty of this or have this sort of feature, which is it's a lot of times there's a family and they all live in a home and they're supported by one person making all the income and they work
one breadwinner.
Yeah, exactly. And they work as, I mean, the one that I can think of is Married with Children, where I think he's a shoe salesman. And there's a lot of things like episodes like that where everyone is kind of set from a basic needs perspective. It kind of lets you put everyone in the workplace and let them play in the sandbox a little bit. But
and again, this is for sitcoms.
Yeah, yeah. Of
like,
course.
There's definitely other shows that deal with like a lot of real stuff. But as far as like a prime time, you know, basic cable sitcom, you rarely see an episode like they're dealing with like Michael's having real money problems.
Yeah, I think you need. I think you need a character kind of like Michael Scott to make credit card debt funny.
100%.
And it does, because
it's not
off.
Funny. Like a lot of the stuff is not funny, but
could be very triggering for a lot
totally,
of people.
Totally. And some of the deleted scenes that they cut like really go hard into that. You know, we'll get into that.
I think another piece of this, too, you talk about real life or maybe more realistic feeling sort of scenarios or plot lines for these characters. I think Kelly, this is a more minor storyline, but I think Kelly being challenged to be more adult in her relationship or more mature in her relationship with Daryl is a similar sort of thing. If you have Dwight dealing with his heartbreak over losing Angela and Michael dealing with his money problems and also that how that influences his relationship with Jan, I think some of the extra scenes we got in the Superfan cut show a little bit more of that relationship with Jen.
Yes.
And then, yeah, Kelly's relationship with Daryl, I think, also kind of lives within that. I think one of the interesting things about this particular Superfan cut is that it doesn't give us a lot of information that we didn't already know. It just adds more space and filler. The show, the episodes breathe a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So if you don't
more
have Peacock...
Mo's.
More Mo's. If you don't have Peacock and you aren't able to watch these episodes, it's not as if we have any big grand reveal plot-wise or story-wise or anything about these characters. It's just that you get a little bit more time in each of the little moments.
And we will be discussing these deleted scenes, so please
exactly.
Pause now and watch the episode. Come back.
Certainly.
If you haven't already.
Well, I think we should break it down by main storylines as we do. And should we start by jumping right into the main topic, the Michael and his money?
Yeah,
I would love to. I mean, I'm glad that the other storylines in this episodes are not throwaways. Like none of them felt like throwaways to me. Everything is about power dynamics. This is like this crazy mix of different levels of power dynamics in one episode at once. The main one being the power of money over just generally living in this country, right? Like Michael and Jan dealing with this, the power dynamics of Ryan as a boss over Michael, the power dynamics of Daryl and Kelly, like kind of starting and figuring out the relationship, Jim and Pam again blossoming, and then Andy and Angela are also trying to get a relationship going. It's all about like what am I prioritizing the most, and the main thing through this, Michael, his insecurities, not just about himself, but now like not having money that then becomes this, the whole office knows about it all of a sudden. And with these deleted scenes, I mean, we don't see in the original cut of like Michael going around asking people for money or ways to make money, you know, except for like Kevin and the bookie, you know, like, do you know someone in the mob scene?
But yeah,
like,
we get another scene where he's asking Phyllis and asking, how much money does Bob make? And like,
it's
excruciating, but like, in a good way.
Very.
But he literally like hits almost everyone in the office and we get sort of their relationship to money in the middle of it, except for like Meredith, you know, who's like, I'm banging the wrong guy in response to hearing about Bob Vance's money. I'm banging the wrong guy in this building is what she says.
To which Phyllis
thinks, I think she's banging the two Vance refrigeration guys for sure.
For sure.
But back to Michael, with this extended cut, it seemed it's not all Jan's fault. It felt in the extended cut, they'd made a point of like, hey, it's actually Michael's spending habits that are at the root of this problem.
I would only say that I always thought it was Michael is the issue. But I get what you're saying. There's a little bit more hint to that. Like, we get a scene where Oscar is like breaking down the costs, which we saw part of before, where Jan is, he's like, oh, okay, Target, you know, $200. And he's like, Jan bought napkins and silverware. And he's like, okay, you know,
bed sheets.
Right. Bed sheets. Yeah. She's just buying all these practical things, trying to make his condo nicer. And then he, of course, we already know the scene where he's buying, you know, Muppet DVDs and the
Forgot
core.
It was already in the DVD player, bought it again.
Right. But,
and then when he mentions silverware, Oscar's like, okay, adults need silverware. And he's like, you don't need silverware. Like, sometimes adults can eat with their hands.
Yeah. I think the show is always kind of portrayed as a bit of both. I think obviously you have Michael spending really frivolously on, you know, things like magic sets and the core stabilizers where you twist and you twist. And
I can
you
do
sit
like
on
one
the stabilizer bar.
And the Marine Corps. Actually,
yes. I think what we see a little bit more in this episode is how much of a combination of it is that they go down to one car, but it's a Porsche. And
yes.
which Jan drives after drinking too much wine. So, I mean, it's not like she's
Jan loves pulling into a parking lot fast and not parking in a parking space.
Yes.
It's a really bad habit.
That's it. You're right. She
That's
does
the equivalent
that twice
of Michael's.
In this.
It's the equivalent of Michael's habit looking straight up at icicles.
I think
you're going to get hurt one day. Don't do that.
He loves the way they look when you stand right underneath them.
You do see, I mean, I think we get to see a little bit of both. It is kind of funny to see that Jan is making practical purchases, or at least somewhat practical purchases. At the same time, you know that she is overbuying a little bit. We already have a sofa. These things need to match. It costs what it costs. So we see a little bit of that as well. I think one thing that I really appreciated in this version is when Jan comes in and Michael asks her to wait in his office, he's clearly avoiding going in to talk to her because she's got more, I think they're tile samples or carpet samples.
Yes.
And
Jan's waiting for you.
Yeah, he's avoiding that conversation. He's just trying to talk to people in the office. It's funny because he's not trying to distract them. He's trying to just kill time and distract himself almost.
He's running out the clock if he can. Also on the extended cuts, it's funny to me because like Jan's rocking the velvet tracksuit like way longer, like for way more of the day than I initially realized.
Yes.
she woke up in that and stayed in it all day. And it's not until the train scene that she's a different clothes.
Well, then when she goes to pick him up, he says, how was yoga? And she says, I didn't go. So the reason that he
Why
couldn't
didn't
use...
you go, I just didn't.
What were you going to say, Sean?
Oh, I was just gonna. I mean, so many fabulous Michael moments in this little story arc. I mean, I declare bankruptcy.
Yeah,
and of course, like Oscar breaking down his finances. But we also get Michael working at the
Lipophedrin
call center. And as you were saying, Edwin, he's kind of like he's kind of living the dream in a way. He's like popular amongst everybody, but he also can't make a sale, perhaps because he's being restricted to the script.
Mm-hmm. Or he's like, this realm of sales is not him. Like this is churn and burn sale. This is volume sales. He is more of a relationships type of sales guy.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to talk about, you know, the kid not getting, you know, not making the soccer team. He cares about those details. He wants to extend a hand and really know someone, you know, to make their sales. We see this in later seasons. We see him do this with his Rolodex later, right? But here for Nick Figaro, manager to the Stars, it's simply a matter of making your calls as efficiently as possible, which is why Vikram, who's been there the longest, makes the most sales. And Michael is having a hard time being managed by Nick Figaro.
I think, too, it's kind of a metaphor. Michael chafing in this situation is a bit of a... It's the same sort of metaphor that underpins all of Dunder Mifflin throughout the show, which is the thing that sets them apart is the customer service throughout. Correct. That's a kind of a repeated refrain.
Good point. Good point.
Yeah. And again, it's just Michael can't make his connection. It's volume sales. It's making the most amount of calls and saying the least, where Michael succeeds by developing a relationship and landing kind of the big sales, the big accounts, the big fish. Like, that's kind of where Michael tends to excel.
You get a hint like Stanley Hudson, per se.
Yeah,
I mean, you get a hint of it when he's like on the phone talking to somebody about like, I don't know why the coach won't play him more. That's too bad.
I also love that they added a scene where he realizes that he talks to a guy and he sneaks in this thing about, oh, I could sell you paper, 30 cents a ream. That's way more expensive than what I'm paying now.
No, he says that's way less. That's like way half less, what I'm way paying less. Now.
Yeah.
What do you use, Staples? No, Dunder Mifflin.
And I love that, too, because I think he's throwing that in to sweeten the deal for the Lupofedrin.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. For sure.
Not that he's just trying to make a Dunder Mifflin sale on the side. He's just trying to sweeten it.
He's floundering hard in that moment.
No kidding.
Well, and like the whole time he's at Lupofedrin, like, Nick Figaro is kind of looming. He's always walking up behind him. He's always looking through his window. Very different managerial style than Michael Scott.
One thing that I love in the office is when we get to see other workplaces, specifically like other office environments. And specifically when we get to see the workplace dynamics that are in comparison to Dunder Mifflin, which in season one is kind of propped up as like this very typical office environment, or one that everyone is supposed to be able to relate to. And you get a little bit of that here, even though it's a lot more cold, a lot more temporary, a lot more get in, get out, you make the call, you make the pitch, you get out. We see it in Stanford. There's a great deleted scene in Turf War in season 8 where Harry Janarone is talking about all the different people who work in his office, including this one couple that keeps being like, will they, won't they, just get a room already, which is one of my favorite moments in all the deleted scenes. Yeah, just seeing the other branches. And so it's funny to see this paralleled. Or when we have Bob Odenkirk as the pseudo-Michael in season 9. And it's just funny to see this office environment where Michael fits in so well with all the different people.
Down to Nick Figaro having a Froggy 101 sticker next to his desk as well.
Oh, wow.
It's a great little detail they put in there.
And we get to see Michael, succeed socially. Which is so funny. It's so different from the improv class where he can't get invited along and they're inviting
him. He rejects his coworkers twice. Mm-hmm. Once to dinner during the shift and then for beers after the shift. And he says no both times, which felt very not Michael Scott to me.
And he had to say he wouldn't no to take Jim one and of Pam dinner. So
and he had
this is in a rough episode.
That's how bad he's hurting for money. He's just like, I can't do anything that I deeply, deeply want to do.
Do you think that he knows deep down that the problem is him? If he's so adamant on keeping it a secret from Jan and willing to work all night a second job?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. Self-aware. I don't know if he knows deep down.
self-awareness is not one of his
I'm talking like
suits.
Deep.
Yeah,
deep
below,
down.
Subconsciously. Below.
He doesn't know he knows.
Oh, well, another deleted scene that we get is him talking about all the dreams that he's having. He's like, I'm not worried about money. And he's like, you know, my nightmares are like me running from a monster who wants money and I can't give him any.
Yeah.
And
I love that. I loved that.
So there you go. You might be right.
I think one of the things that I love so much, I know that we did a season 4 Superfan episode a couple episodes ago.
Yes.
Episodes of our podcast. And I know we're going back to the well, but season 4 is some of the, I think, richest ground within the show for different storylines and different episode formats. It was a time when The Office was doing a lot more two-parters. The hour-long episodes were airing. Mm-hmm. It was also the time of the writer's strike, so different storylines were getting folded in different ways.
There was a huge time off in the middle of the season.
Yeah, WGA strike in 07-08, and it totally changes the feel of this season to have it laid out like this. It's hard to know what the ideal version of the season or series or episode was when it was pitched in the writer's room, but it definitely influenced the show that we saw in the moment. And it's interesting to watch it laid out in this particular format again.
I do believe this one would have come out before the writer's strike. I'm trying to remember. I think Dinner Party was the first one back.
First one
that.
Back. Yeah.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. I mean, and like, it, maybe this isn't like a direct influence of the writer's strike per se, but it is the season where they do hour-longs, where they're trying to tell different stories, and they combine episodes that, like, you can see how this is a two-parter. Like, so there's so much within Mike, like Michael and his money and Jan is such a long storyline that it like flows through two episodes. It flows until after the night at the call center when he has to go and present to Ryan, and then he talks to Oscar, and he has to quit the job and talk to Jan. Like, these storylines are so much longer in these extended episodes.
It's
PowerPoint.
Alex is doing the PowerPoint. Yeah, I mean, this episode is like certain two-parters or certain hour-longs kind of feel like one big long episode. This is certainly in two acts, right? You know, we've got Michael, part one, Michael at the call center and Jim and Pam at Shroot Farms. And act two is happening at the office, really.
Yeah, they all enter at the same time. They're all yawning, which I really love. Right. I love that moment in the show.
Everybody's been up on that.
Michael, Dwight, Jim, Pam, they've all been up late.
The central cast. And then Ryan comes in with a Red Bull in his hand and be like, how's my favorite branch doing? It's a really nice little moment. Yeah.
Even though he's probably been up all night too. But
sure.
Do you want to talk more about Michael and his money with Jan, or do you want to pivot to a different storyline?
It's just a nice moment in the end between Michael and Jan. I mean, I've always felt that was kind of heartwarming, that Jan, you know, seems very cold for the majority of this episode and the majority of the entire series, but just has a moment where she's like, hey, you stood by my side, I'll stand by yours. Of course,
it's the only warm moment from Jan in nine seasons.
Pretty much.
It stands, other than when she's like interacting with her. With ass turd.
The quote that I have pulled up is, Michael, no, what I want to say is you were there for me by my side without even a thought. That's just who you are. I mean, no matter how badly I treat you or what I'm going through, you just are there for me. And that is a guy we're staying beside. So where's this train taking us? I think the engineer left. But
I have a qualm really quick. This is my favorite episode. My one sticking point in this episode is that Michael says engineer, not conductor. When he's talking about the train, it's not in line with who Michael Scott is. That's it. He would have said conductor.
You're right.
Dwight or Toby would have said conductor.
Yeah.
Or engineer, maybe.
No, they would have said engineer. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. They would have gotten it right.
Michael would have said conductor.
The thing that jumps out at me from that is Jan saying, no matter how badly I treat you, that she kind of has an idea. She understands that she's not just being self-destructive, but she's also like kind of taking other people with her. Like they're kind of in on it together. They're both like they're really taking each other down. They're collapsing inward on themselves, like two dying stars. Like
two dying stars.
Yeah,
I love
a red giant and a what was the other one? Do you remember learning this in astronomy?
Ooh, no.
Types of dying star: red giant and a blue dwarf or something. Anyway,
yeah, that sounds right.
Go ahead, Sean.
No, I do think that this is a deleted scene. I don't remember it, but you get Michael. And Jan. You get Michael and Jan walking away from the train, and. You know, she's.
How do you guys feel about the feet shot?
Oh yes, well, people have a big problem with that shot.
It's a controversial shot.
Sort of like a B camera, like
under the train.
Yeah, like B roll footage.
It is the only like artistic shot in this entire show. No, in terms of like, here's a shot just for like.
Pool party when Dwight falls into the water, there's a camera underwater all of a sudden. And that is also that is even more offensive to me than this. But yes,
but in terms of the logistics of a documentary, I'm talking about just in terms of like film, a creative scene setting film shot. It's like the only time they use that. Really.
Yes. It's weird. But
I like
we
it.
Also get
I'm a sucker.
I think it's a deleted scene where they're walking away from the train and Jan is saying, like, I have some ideas of how we'll make some money. Mm-hmm. And Michael's like, please don't sell your implants. And she's like, I'm not gonna. I'm keeping them. I know you like them. Although they are uncomfortable for me. And he's like, they're cute, though.
She's like, my nipples have been hurting.
He's like, I know, but it's cute.
That's where that's one where they cut around it. So that you get like the deleted scene just gives you more of that lead in, basically.
Well, yeah, let's move on.
Last note about this one is I thought doing a talking head with Stanley over speakerphone from the lepifedrin place is genius. I love that, like, which means the producers called Stanley back from that phone.
Yeah.
Like, do you mind if we talk to you? And he's like, fine. Yeah. And just that little blinking light while he's talking, it's just such a funny way to talk to Stanley. It's the best.
And to paint the picture of him watching his mystery stories with his glass of red wine.
Well done.
Well, let's move on then to Jim and Pam visiting the agro-tourist hotspot, Shroot Farms. So, of course, Dwight is still in trouble with Angela for killing her cat. But now they've
broken up.
They've broken up. And
they've broken up with an itemized transaction.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, Jim overhears Dwight talking to somebody about Shroot Farms as a bed and breakfast. And Jim and Pam decide that they're going to spend the night there, which should be either very scary or very funny.
And an added content is an extra phone call that Pam makes to Jim while they're deciding this, where like, please hold, and Dwight holds, and Pam calls Jim from reception. Be like, do you actually want to spend a night there? And they talk about it right next to him. It was great. I just love the inner office phone games that go on sometimes, and that was a really good one.
Yeah. It reminds me a little bit, this particular sort of decision to stay at Shroot Farms, reminds me of when Andy and Dwight are preparing the sales contest against the computer. And we need something like a bell or an alarm. And
are Jim's, you calling me wrong?
Well, yeah.
Sorry, and, I don't have to drop
it's okay,
words.
It's okay. And Jim says, or a gong. And Andy says, I can't tell if he's mocking you. And Jim says, I am. But they're like a moment like this where Jim and Pam go to stay at Shroot Farms is both, they're both kind of making fun of Dwight, but also they are patronizing his business and they help him out, both of them together. Yeah. And like it's
the
both.
Joke wears off when you're there for 12 hours or whatever, you know.
Yeah, it kind of sets the tone and timbre for their friendship in season 9 when you know, he talks about Dwight and it talks about his relationship with all the different coworkers at the finale and talks about where he's at with Jim and Pam, that like I think he says Pam is my best friend. Mm-hmm. So like it kind of begins that a little bit. It sets the stage for Jim to consult Dwight in the hallway, but we do get our first one of our first visuals of Shroot Farms. One of our first tours of Shroot Farms.
Yes.
Yeah, and a lot more time with Mose. Of course, if you watch the super fan cut or if you've seen, I think the deleted scenes are all up on YouTube, of we get Mose serving Jim and Pam a huge platter of bacon. And then
everybody poops.
And then just saying everybody poops. It's the only way to, you know,
get rid of the food. Where's Dwight? He's at his day place.
Yeah. And then you get
a place for day.
I mean, you also get
day
the hint.
Place. Okay, go ahead.
You also get a hint that even Mose misses Angela, right? They bring up, Angela hasn't
Pam
been...
calls her Angel.
Oh, does he? I didn't notice that.
Yeah. No, Pam does. It was like, if you, like something about Angel. And I think, I don't know if they think that's code word for Angela or something.
Oh, okay. I didn't pick up on that. Yeah, but then he just kind of gets really solemn and wanders away. I think that's kind of, you know, besides all the jokes, right, about, you know, Shroot Farms being wireless and, you know, as soon as I find where Moe's hid those wires, we'll have it hit up and running again. Like, I
their
mean,
mattresses
all,
don't follow standard sizes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the irrigation hotel room. I mean, besides all the jokes, the point of this storyline is that Jim and Pam are kind of realizing just how miserable Dwight is without Angela. Mm-hmm. And most.
They're realizing Dwight is a real human being.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is kind of their entire stay there. And hearing Dwight moan at night, oh yes, ever since the storm, which is still my favorite line in 9 seasons. It's my favorite moment. Does Moe's have nightmares? Oh yes. The way it's shot, Dwight looking back over his shoulder, it's just beautiful. What century is this? I mean, it's just so many good moments. But you're right. It all serves to make them see, like, Dwight's actually in pain. Like, Dwight feels pain, just like we do. And let's ease up on him. But, you know, which leads to the stairwell scene, which we'll get to. But, yeah, there's this. I mean, it's a great mixture of, like, it's really funny, and the whole time Dwight is in pain. And which kind of goes back to, like, this is why I love this episode so much. It's kind of, it's the yin and yang. Like, everything in this episode is, like, real shit right next to hilarious stuff all the time. It's the, this episode is the tragedy and comedy mask.
Yeah.
Together. Do you mean, dancing together. I think you mean manure, and we do get a bit more of real manure in this episode.
I mean, some manure, just not as much.
Yeah. It is funny, though, because something that you, I think viewers would appreciate is how there is more Moe's in this extended cut and more of them joking around with the manure. How when it's not snowy, they have to make do, and Moe's will make a manure man that's almost as tall as he is. We also, this was a scene that I for sure had never seen before, I think, but the thing they cut in is Moe's walking up to a camera that's just on the porch and laying down and just staring at it.
Yeah. Weird. There's a camera, like, shooting an establishing shot.
I'm glad they cut that one.
And while we're on the topic of Moe's deleted scenes, you also get him doing a trampoline performance for Jim and Pam while Dwight tries to make a table. I especially like the joke of Dwight, like, holding the piece of wood while trying to saw it, and it's just moving around, because that's exactly how I saw things.
Do you see saw?
No seesaw?
Yeah. Moe's and I see saw all the time.
I need like some clamps.
Moe's is jumping and he's just like, Dwight, can I stop? They're not even looking. He's like, don't stop. They paid for a show. It's okay. You can stop. Like, no. It's great stuff. I mean, yeah, they do a really good job, I think, of, like, taking Dwight's pain from the office, and then it bleeds into what he's doing at Stroot Farms, and then even back to the office. And if the TripAdvisor reviews being a common thread throughout all this thing. But yeah, I mean, like, in the midst of this whole episode, you have Jim and Pam, and Jim's talking head while they're out in the field is like, I thought my first night away with Pam would be a little different, right? And it's, you're like, oh, this is their first night they've stayed anywhere together. You know, you're reminded that, like, despite three seasons of crushing and will they, won't they, it's like they're still very early in their actual relationship. And to spend it at Shroot Farms, you know, is very emblematic of what happens in the rest of the season. And I think you made a great call, Edwin, about, like, this is the episode when Jim goes from being vindictive against Dwight to more of an, not an ally, but, like, more of a partner with Dwight, in, like, yeah, we razz each other, but I love him. You know, like, I don't think that was the case before this episode.
I mean, that's something that you bring that up makes me think about how it's like, is that also because Jim has found some happiness that he didn't have before? You know, he was miserable, so he kind of took it out on Dwight. Whereas now he kind of feels bad. He's got Pam. He got what he wanted. And so he doesn't
watching
need to be
Dwight
mean
go through
Dwight.
What he felt, you know, for so long.
Yeah.
I do think that sort of empathy really shines through in this episode. And I agree, Alex, I did make a great point. but that scene in the stairwell is, I think, one of the most memorable moments in the entire show. It's Dwight and Jim, who are so often at each other's throats for one reason or another, just having that shared moment, and Jim kind of makes that appeal to Dwight. And Dwight can only mumble back. And I love that we don't even get
the... I don't know how he didn't crack it. Twice just being like...
I also love that they don't, like... Jim leaves before Dwight reaches out to him. When he reaches out, he's not there. And in that in between, Dwight comes back and he's collected, and he moves Jim's stuff off his desk. And there's a little bit of a reset. It helps him out at the very least.
And this whole episode to me is leading up to that conversation between Jim and Dwight and the conversation between Jan and Michael on the train.
You know,
those are like the two, this is leading to those two things. And maybe the conversation between Daryl and Kelly as well in Kelly's cubicle, in Kelly's nook, rather. And to go back to the Jim and Dwight stairwell scene, I mean, we should talk about this because it's such a powerhouse of a scene. Over the course of nine seasons, I mean, emotionally, to me, it only ever hits that level a few times, you know, in Casino Night and in Goodbye Michael and whatever. But to me, like, this scene between Dwight and Jim, as I would say, is one of the top, you know, three relationships in the entire show, really, hits this crescendo at this point. And it's not the climax, really. I just said it is the crescendo, but it's not. It's really like when it becomes something completely different. And I don't know. What do you think? If Jim doesn't leave the stairwell, like if Jim is there when Dwight reaches out, how different is their relationship from there on out? Like if they had a moment and they hug, you know, and they're actually touching each other.
That would almost be weird.
I know it would, but like would it have solved a lot of things if Jim had actually felt each other?
I mean, you need that distance to keep their dynamic and their back and forth funny.
I completely agree. It's just a fun what if. It's just one of those things, yeah.
It's the same reason that you need Pam to push Jim a little bit more to stop him from being fired. You're not here. It's like he's been bitten by a radioactive Dwight. He's like super Dwight.
Yeah.
What I really love about this episode is it is like, it's very like, it's got the vibe of like early Office, like even though we're now midway through the series pretty much, because all these things are depressing, and then it's just like this, then you just get this little bit of hope at the end, you know. It's like you get that moment with Jim and Dwight, or you know, Dwight gets the nice TripAdvisor review from Pam. You know, it's not that Michael figures out a way to get his money back or, you know, to pay these things off. It's just that Jan isn't mad at him
your situation might not change, but you might change a little.
Yeah.
Bit. Yeah.
You don't always get what you want.
But if you try sometimes you just might find
you sometimes. You get what you need.
Yeah.
But I think that I like when things are kind of, you know, a little bit tragic, and then it's like, you know, don't worry. There's just like a nugget of hope at the end, and that's all you need.
Just that sweet bump, of hope. Keep you going for another five seasons.
I mean, should we now move to talk about Angela and Andy, Daryl and Kelly, Kevin and his band? Some of the other little storylines within this office.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know, almost part...
Oscar and Michael.
Yeah.
Almost part of Dwight's story arc for this episode is Andy trying to seduce Angela. And, of course, that's making Dwight only more miserable. Andy is not doing a very good job at seducing Angela until, of course, he finds Garbage, the cat.
One thing that we get from the extended cut of this is more of Andy trying to ask Angela out. He suggests they go to a scrimmage between the varsity and JV lacrosse team for Scranton Hugh. And he consults Jim and Pam, or excuse me, Jim and Dwight.
His dozen moonwalks past accounting don't work.
One of my favorite moments from this extended cut is when they're talking about Andy trying to hit on Angela, and Phyllis says she's just the kind of thing you need to do her once to get her out of your system or something.
Yeah.
And then Dwight gets right up in her face and says, "Stay out of this, you," which is exactly what he says to the paper mache head.
Yep.
Yeah. Stay out of this, you.
It is. You're talking from Halloween.
Yeah.
Season 2.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I wrote that down too. Phyllis coming through with the spicy advice on doing Angela.
Of course.
I love an unleashed Phyllis. It's great. And we get a lot of Phyllis and Bob, like people talking about Phyllis and Bob too, of like how rich Bob is.
Yeah. We didn't mention.
I could have married a millionaire refrigeration tycoon.
we mentioned earlier the deleted scene Kate
Did
Flannery.
I stood up?
Thank you. Kate Flannery is saying how, you know, she's sleeping with the wrong guys in the building, and Phyllis just follows that up with, you know, "Oh, Bob would never sleep with you. He hates you."
Mm-hmm. I think one thing that's very Phyllis too is Michael says a millionaire refrigeration tycoon, and I don't know if Bob's a millionaire really. Like, I don't think anything in the show is supposed to suggest that.
Yeah,
but she also doesn't say that it's not true, which I think is very Phyllis.
I bet he's a millionaire.
Yeah.
Yeah, he likes to watch. She likes to watch Bob beat guys up.
Yeah,
on
yeah.
her behalf. So. It tracks. Mm-hmm. It all tracks.
Yeah.
Let's talk. Should we talk about Andy's how wide Andy's stance is at reception?
When yeah,
very wide.
Never let him know which way you're going. Yeah.
It kills me every time because we see him doing it the first time, and then the second cut in a later take, he's clearly adjusted and his like neck is right at the edge of reception desk. He is standing. So his feet are flitting, and it's so unnecessary, but kills me for some reason. I love it.
That's Andy in a nutshell. Unnecessary, yeah. but it kills you. You know, it's funny too that this version of Andy is the one that maybe makes the most sense for Angela, someone that's that severe and all the reasons.
His comebacks
to
Pam are awesome. Yeah, they're so funny. Yeah, and I punched a hole through a wall. Yeah,
that's
you
right.
Did.
You did.
That's right. Yeah. You did.
The line of wasps so long it goes back to Moses.
Who then parts his legs like the Red Sea.
So, yeah, the whole exchange is so funny. Pam, what's up? Andy, me all night dreaming about Angela's smoking hot body. You're being gross. Not from a male perspective.
It's very similar to what he does to Jim when he's like, I'm so horny.
Who is this?
I can't help you with that.
Yeah. Moonwalk past it counting like 10 times.
That didn't work. God, Andy's... Yeah, this is just peak Andy right here.
Very good. And clueless to, you know, Dwight's misery, of course.
Dwight's depression throughout this is very, very pronounced. Obviously, I mentioned the itemized breakup in the parking lot where they're going through their things and the handshake. And a detail maybe people haven't noticed is the last item they're talking about is that figurine mm-hmm. that Angela left on Dwight's bedstand. And when Dwight is crying at Shroot Farms in the, you know, Moses Has Nightmares, he's holding that little figurine
yes.
In his hands. It's just very nicely done there. And Dwight dealing with Angela, this isn't the first time we've seen him wrestle with this, right? He has this whole thing with Phyllis in a different episode about mm-hmm. how do I get Angela back? But in this one, it's very raw for Dwight. And, you know, he's not taking his job seriously. We've never seen that before.
Yeah.
It's very jarring to hear him answer the phone and be like, dunder, whatever, we're out of paper. And Dwight Jim's like, is there a paper shortage I should know about? It's very unnerving to Jim. Mm-hmm. You know,
Dunder like something.
Which goes back to what we've talked about in the show, which is Dwight taking his job seriously is the only reason this show works.
It's the gravity.
Ways.
Mm-hmm. Holds everything
yeah,
together.
That's the nucleus at the center of this, right? And so when he's not there taking his job seriously, it's very alarming. But he comes around. I mean, this is what I was going to say. The deleted scene when Michael has all of his credit cards laid out on his desk.
Yes.
And he's trying to talk to Dwight about, like, I used to get offers for credit cards to transfer your balance from the previous one, and he stops getting those credit cards. Dwight's not listening because he's totally depressed, and Michael calls him out. That is the saddest scene in the office. Like, it's just
really
two guys.
Dark. Yeah.
It's two guys at their bottom just yes. trying to like pretend that they're okay. It's so sad. And it was very pronounced. I see why they cut it. It's really harsh.
Agreed.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. No doubt.
Agreed. I don't know if you guys have anything else to say about Andy and Angela.
No, I mean, I think the only, like, we've covered a lot of ground in our time.
Yeah, we have.
I guess if you've never caught this garbage, the cat is garbage, the cat that Dwight tried to give her in the first episode of season 4, which I never got until
his name is garbage meeting. Because that's what he likes to eat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's a feral barn cat. But yeah, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit, but Daryl and Kelly is one of the other sort of things going on. This episode, granted, with the extended cut, it's like
your uncrazy side. Maybe this thing's run its course.
With the extended cut, this episode is an hour long. It's a yeah. lot of time.
It's thick.
Which is almost as long as we've been recording so far.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. we get a little bit of, I like that we get more development there with Daryl and Kelly, that we get a little bit of development with Ryan feeling insecure.
When Daryl walks past Ryan on his way out of the conference room, mm-hmm. love that moment so much. Just a tiny little, just like stares him down.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Ryan kind of goes to like wiping off his shoulder or something. Yeah. He's like, he's like, you're so.
Yeah.
And then the talking him with Thera was like, you know, I think she's only with me because she's like, you know, she wants to hook up when that Ryan dude's around. I get excited when I see a little dude walk through the door.
Yeah.
So good.
And then, of course, even with all of this stuff that we've talked about, you have that last, or you have not the last thing, but you have the memorable scene of who versus whom.
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Yes.
Yeah. You're welcome. You're welcome. That's what I'm here for.
It's an absolute masterclass of comedy writing to me, because that scene, out of all the deleted scenes we see, it's like, there's one to cut, because this has nothing to do with what's going on, mm-hmm. but you can't cut that, because it exists. Like, it's just for the show's sake. It's just for the writer's sake, that scene. And funny enough, it's the only scene that we see Toby in this episode, who directed and wrote this one, but who comes through with the actual answer. And so I'm so happy that one made it to the real cut, because it's just this little sidebar that happens in the conference room that everyone has some buy-in for some reason. Mm-hmm. And it's a, you know, linguistic correction that is meaningless.
Well, that ensemble energy is really warmed up by this point in the series.
Yes.
And I think this is one of the first moments of like that. I don't know. The writers talk about the kill zone of just like when they can just start getting jokes, like jokes are just firing from all sides. This is like one of those first moments in the whole show, probably.
Actually, I take it back, because that's that little whomever scene, it does resolve Kevin's thing about like, I know the answer, but I'm not going to say it because none of you came to my show last night. So it actually does have a role in one of the stories.
That story actually has a beginning, middle, and end.
But as you mentioned, Sean, like, there, it goes from character to character to character so well that you never know whether it's somebody's contributing, or they're making a joke, or they don't get it, or they actually know it's a really fun scene for that entire dynamic.
And the way it starts is very innocent, of like Ryan in Michael's face devolves, and then Ryan's like, whatever, doesn't matter. Michael, quit your other job or you're fired here. It's like a very harsh end, too. It's like, you're playing around, and uh-oh, someone broke something, and it's over.
Yep.
It's paced out really well. It's written really well. Well done, guys.
And exactly what Ryan would say after having been the temp in that room for a few years.
Yeah.
Enough of this. You quit or you're fired. That's a, yeah. I mean, we've gone on quite a bit. I think that wraps up most of what I had to say about this office. I don't know if, or about this episode. I don't know if you guys had anything else you wanted to mention.
No.
Michael's been putting his money into CDs for years.
oh, yeah, thank you.
Compact discs.
My portfolio is a Case Logic.
Yeah. He's bought music he didn't even like. He didn't know.
I have another portfolio in the visor of my car.
Yeah.
I have one quick anecdote about this. I watched this here at this Airbnb we're staying at with my friend Peter, who I've talked about on the episode or on the show before, like, doesn't watch The Office, doesn't necessarily care for it, and he has crazy gym energy. Everything about him is gym. And we were watching this episode together, and the scene when they're driving into Shroot Farms, Peter was like, by the way, Peter knows that we've talked about him on the episode. Oh, yeah. His wife listens to our show and played everything we said for Peter, so he knows.
Love it, great. Love it.
So we were watching it together, and then Peter was sheepishly looks over at me when Jim's driving into Shroot Farms, and he's like, so I used to drop the exact same Saab that Jim is driving in this scene, which is crazy because it's a very rare car. They made like 6,000 of those Saabs.
Wow.
And Peter used to drive that exact car that Jim did.
Oh, my God.
And the way that Peter said it to me was just like,
he's like, uh-oh, I see
you
it.
You guys are right. I even drove that same car.
Hey, hilarious. Maybe he'll become a fan. That's great.
Nah.
Well, there you have it. Money, season 4, episode 7 and 8. Great episode. Classic.
An all-timer. The all-timer for me.
I think it's time that we head to the conference room for 5 minutes. In 5 minutes.
I'm just bidding a bon voyage à la mon petite fiancée. Translation, goodbye, my petite fiancée. This episode is brought to you by Babbel. Whether it's saving more and spending less, getting organized or losing weight, there's a lot of worthwhile goals to set for yourself this year. At the top of my list is learning a new language with Babbel, the language learning app that sold more than 10 million subscriptions. Eu estou aprendendo português. I am learning Portuguese. Not only is learning a new language a fun and engaging new hobby, you can use it while you check off traveling more from your list. The whole Babbel process is addictively fun, fast, and easy. Babbel teaches bite-sized language lessons for real-world use. I've been wanting to learn Portuguese for a really long time, and if you know me well, I've taken lessons, I've tried other things, but I really feel like I'm making great progress with Babbel. Their 15-minute lessons make it the perfect way to learn a new language on the go. Other language learning apps use AI for their lessons plans, but Babbel lessons were created by over 100 language experts. Their teaching method has been scientifically proven to be effective. And with Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, and German. And Portuguese. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent. There are so many ways to learn with Babbel. In addition to lessons, you can access podcasts, games, video stories, and even live classes. And it comes with a 20-day money-back guarantee. Start your new language learning journey today with Babbel. Right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months for free. That's 6 months for the price of 3. Just go to babbel.com and use promo code Scott. That's BABBEL.com code Scott. Babbel, language for life. This episode is brought to you by Feels. CBD isn't about what you feel. It's about what you don't feel. Stress, anxiety, pain. Personally, I've been using CBD more and more lately as a way to help with anxiety. It helps with the nervousness and it helps with falling asleep at night. And it can also be used to relieve pain. But most importantly, Feels is a better way to feel better. Feels is a premium CBD that will help to keep your head clear and help you feel your best. It's hassle-free and delivered directly to your door. CBD naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. There's no hangover or addiction. As I mentioned, it helps me with anxiety. And when you're living with anxiety, any kind of tool you have in your toolbox is just an incredibly helpful thing to have. So I'm grateful for that. Place a few drops of Feels under your tongue and feel the difference within minutes. The thing to remember about CBD is that finding your right dose is important and that everyone's dose is different. In fact, Feels offers a free CBD hotline to help guide your personal experience so that you find your perfect dose. The Feels customer service team is dedicated to making sure you get the best use of your CBD. Joining the Feels monthly membership makes your self-care easy. You'll save money on every order and you can pause or cancel at any time. So start feeling better with Feels. Become a member today by going to feels.com/Scott and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/Scott to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Feels.com/Scott.
Everybody in the conference room in 5 minutes.
Okay, so we've got a couple emails to respond to for today's conference room. First one comes to us from James in sunny London. Happy New Year, yet another great year of listening to your show. I have a question for you all. In the episode Woof.com, when Jim has no motivation for work, Creed asks him, "How far can you reach those lovely long arms of yours?" And then, "How long can you hold that pretty little breath of yours?" My question is, what the hell did Creed have planned? My thoughts are that Creed has mentioned the Loch Ness Monster before, so was he going to suggest Jim help him catch it? Keep up the good work. James, a.k.a. the Goat of Dover.
Goat of Dover. It's a great call. It's a great call. You call that a King James breakfast pie?
What do you guys think? I guess I haven't... I've never caught the "how long can you reach those lovely long arms of yours," but seems like Creed's been scheming here.
I'll pitch something out for you here. Here's what I think happened. I'm making this one off the dome, several drinks deep. But
perfect.
Beach games.
Mm-hmm.
We see Creed on the shore, right, catching fish with his bare hands.
Yep.
I'm gonna guess Creed sees something shiny in the water, something that catches his eye. And Creed can't, let's say Creed's not a good swimmer, can't hold his breath very long. He couldn't get deep enough to uncover whatever that object is. And since beach games, he's been thinking about, like, I need someone who can hold a breath with longer arms than me who can reach where I can't. And he wants to bring Jim back to what's the lake in beach game? It's not Lake Wallenpaumpack, right? It's
Scranton.
Scranton.
We are on the scenes. We are on the shores of scenic Lake Scranton.
Lake Scranton. All right.
I thought I can check it.
There's something in Lake Scranton that Creed wants to get, and I'm going to guess it is Andy's ring that he's been carrying around, just in case he dropped while he was floating in the water.
He's already lost one ring.
Yeah. When Andy went down to dip whatever napkin he had in the water, he lost his ring. And Creed wants Jim to get it back.
I love it. I love it. You make him sound like Gollum, like he can't reach into the water like to get a shiny object.
Maybe Creed's scared of something in the water.
Yeah.
My thought also goes to Loch Ness Monster. That seems to make the most sense as far as Creed scheming, especially with scuba diving. You know, if I can't scuba, what has this all been about?
Yeah,
so it seems like there's a buildup there.
He needs a third chair to
something
to get the Loch Ness Monster.
He wants a partner to throw things in the quarry. These things are all related, right?
I think what James is highlighting here. Yeah, I think what James is highlighting here is that perhaps the writers are, you know, these random things that Creed says that seem like totally just random and wacky and crazy to us. He's focused on one thing, which
I think that's true.
All the treasure in Scotland.
Yeah.
Oh, so my question is, what are you doing here?
Yeah, because he's like, I'm here because I'm working on the plan.
Do you think the FBI is going after someone who's legitimately doesn't know what they're doing? No way. They're not wasting their time. They're going after a mastermind.
It's a conspiracy. They don't want the world. He's
been printing fake IDs out of his car for years.
As far as Jim reaching those pretty little arms of his, the seed is planted in Christmas Party in season 2 when Creed gives him the shirt and the sleeves are way too short.
Yeah,
maybe that's where he first hatched
this little number.
Yeah,
interesting.
Gives me this little number.
Yep, that's
Reed
exactly
has
what
short arms. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, James, for sending that in. This next email comes to us.
Goat of Dover. So funny.
Yeah, that's awesome.
He's a real Archibald, and this man George. Yeah.
This next one comes to us from Steph. You guys. After releasing multiple superfan episode discussions.
And another one.
I think it's time for you to finally admit the deleted scenes count as canon. You've rejected this idea twice before, and you've officially disproved yourselves. Admit it. You have one day.
I have an answer.
They always give an ultimatum.
I have an answer, Steph.
Okay.
Peacock, a.k.a. NBC, right? The host, the check writer for this entire series, on their own platform, created it as an entirely new separate show called Office Superfan Episodes that they put these out on. If this was canon, why wouldn't they have just replaced or put this in their regular Office episode feed? They didn't, because they know it's not the same show. They had to make a whole separate thing. Yeah. Is it for getting the data? Yeah, probably. Is it to have separate viewing things? Yes. But I'm going to go with Peacock, who created all of this, aka NBC, and they made it a separate show, so to me it's a separate show.
Hmm. All right. Holding to it. Standing strong.
You Alex think I'm Ward. Budging what? After four drinks? Hell no.
Edwin? I see what Steph is saying. I understand, and I know that when we made our point initially, the show did not exist in this format. But I will say now, here's what I will say. I do not agree to sell, which is to say nay. Quoting Michael in Woof.com.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you? What happened to you in high school? I'm just going to double down for the sake of doubling down.
We also did an episode about like pitching Office reboots and reunions, and none of that was true. So, you know, just because we talk about it doesn't mean we agree. You know, it's like, don't listen to us. What do we know? Go listen to Office Ladies. Go listen to the Deep Office Deep Dive.
Well,
you know,
disagree with us, but still listen to us.
Don't go listen to those shows. Stay with us, Steph. Stay with us and keep disagreeing.
Well, look, guys, I feel like I'm going to stick with y'all on this and double down. The deleted
solidarity,
scenes are not,
baby.
I'll say, you know, hey, we're having these discussions because we're 145 minimum hours into talking about this show. And eventually you got to dive deeper, right? All right. So we will continue to discuss the superfan episodes. We'll continue to bring up the deleted scenes. But is it The Office? No.
I mean, The Office is what they aired for 9 seasons when it came out. That's what the show is.
There it is.
Okay?
There it is.
So you have one day. You have one day.
You have one day, Steph. Come back at us. Clap back, dog. Clap back.
What? Is there another question, Sean?
No, that's it. That's it. That's all I have.
I think you said the first question was from James in Texas, that it was turned out to be from James instead of England. I could be wrong, and if I'm wrong, maybe you should cut it. Cut this.
Was it London? Was it London, Texas?
No, you are thinking of our
the trivia,
which comes to us from John from Texas. So we will be right back with some trivia.
Nice segue.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
All right, today's trivia comes to us from John from Texas. He says, hey guys, first let me say thanks for all you do. I found the pod at the beginning of the pandemic, and it quickly became my number one pod. I am on my third time re-listening to all the episodes and listen every day. I put together some trivia.
Thank you.
Yeah, awesome, man. Thank you.
It's
unreal, right? Yeah, yeah.
Always. I put together some trivia from Season 8, Episode 9, Mrs. California. Hope it makes it on the show. Thanks again for all you do for all Office fans. Hey.
He must have known I was in California.
Thank you. All right, here we go. I've got it queued up right here. Okay, guys.
Edwin is Mr. California now because he lives there.
Me? Yeah.
I'm simply visiting as Mrs. California.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Season 8, Episode 9, Mrs. California. In the cold open, Dwight says every second sitting takes how long off of your life?
I want to say it's 2 years or something like that.
It is an hour. Oh, go ahead.
An hour?
Oh, I was going to say like 2 hours.
An hour. An hour for every second you sit.
Yeah.
Also, who catches Dwight about to sit in the break room?
Kevin.
I'm going to say Phyllis.
Daryl. I'm pretty sure he said something like, you're going to take a load off. Yeah.
There's information here.
Okay, guys. So what is Andy's middle name? It's said while signing Jim's check.
Baines.
Andrew Baines Bernard.
Andrew Baines Bernard. I was born in blood. Sorry. Go ahead.
How many seconds does Robert California say his wife will be walking in the door?
15.
8. 4.
4.
4?
4 seconds. My wife is going to walk through that door under no circumstances. Can you hire her? Okay. What is
lying, son of a bitch? Again, we don't have the drop board, but.
Dang, oh, man.
Sexuality is a spectrum. Go ahead.
What is Ryan's scam foundation that he mentions right before Robert and his wife walk in? Ryan is running a scam.
It's like the Sunshine Fund or something? I don't know.
Close.
What?
Alex, you got a guess?
The Sunshine Academy.
It is the Dream for a Wish Foundation.
Ah, okay. Dream for a Wish.
What is the name of Robert's wife, a.k.a. Mrs. California?
Susan.
Susan, correct.
Yeah.
And how long...
Surprisingly, not Kathy.
or Katie,
Katie. How long does Daryl say he used to want... How long does Daryl say he used to want to live till?
There was a black president.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, nice.
What is the name Andy uses for reception when taking Mrs. California on a tour?
Ron?
The area of reception.
Welcome desk?
Perhaps the person who works reception. Wood.
Welcomer.
Aaronville. Aaronville.
Okay.
Oh, to Aaronville. I thought, okay, gotta go. I just made Ron some name.
What job does Dwight say is the only job easier than sales?
Being a mother.
Yes. Farming celery.
Being a mother.
Yeah.
What are the stations Dwight shows Daryl in the first version of Dwight Schrute's Gym for Muscles?
Oh, gravel bucket squat yoke.
Yep.
Wow, nailed that one.
I just love that one.
Dedicated phone book ripping station.
Yes.
Cutting tin.
Yeah. Yes.
He'll pay you 9 cents a yard.
From the tin you cut.
Yes. And then, can you name the last one that he doesn't?
Yards in, your forearms will be on fire.
Yeah.
There's one more thing that he doesn't really explain or name, but heating tires with sledgehammers.
Okay.
This is a great trivia. We still got a few more questions here. So every third month is a discount month for Dwight's gym. How much does he charge on the discount month?
$80. I don't know.
$19.
I have no idea.
$19 on the discount month. Okay. What name does Andy use for his grandma?
I really wanted to say it's like it's like Mima or Nana or it's something so Gam Gam.
Yes.
Gam Gam.
Nailed it. Okay. What is Dwight's way to build a business?
I don't know. Nothing comes
to mind.
Is
this when he's talking with Daryl? Oh, Daryl's like, clearly you know how to run a business.
Yeah. I don't even know if I remember this. Maybe this is a deleted scene. He says, get the black people to do it to get the white people to do
it.
I
remember.
And then get the black people to stop doing it. Okay.
I remember. Oh,
okay.
All right. Mm. Just a few more here. What is the name of Oscar's dog he shows sitting in a ladle?
Oh, my God. Gerald.
Nice, dude.
Okay.
Nice job.
You guys are doing a good job.
I was going to say Charlie.
Are we? I don't know.
Why does Robert say he has to hurry to the ATM?
To get there before the homeless man sets up camp for the night.
That's right. Who else is on the roof, and what are they doing on the roof when Jim is
Creed flying a drone.
Yeah. And then finally, who does Dwight think Daryl is trying to impress by going to the gym?
Oh, Val Kilmer.
Val Kilmer.
I am going to make you the hottest dude Val Kilmer's ever seen. There you have it. That's our trivia from John. Thank you so much, John. If you have trivia that you would like to send to us and try and stump us, email us, mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. You can also send us questions, and you can call us and leave us a message. That's 503-694-9314. We're on Facebook and Instagram. We have a website, michaelscottpod.com, and we have a store, mspcstore.com, where you can buy crew neck sweaters and coffee mugs with the artwork by the
group. Oh, shout out to Ashley on Twitter, who posted a photo with her sweater saying,
nice.
So proud to be part of the crewneck crew. Hashtag crewneck crew. Let's get that thing going, guys.
Yeah,
join the hashtag crewneck crew. Grab yourself an MSPC sweater. We got them. We love crewneck sweaters here. Join us. There's still several months of winter. Come on board. Join the crewneck crew, folks. MSPCstore.com. We got whites, grays, light blues. That's
it. End of list.
Yes, mspcstore.com. Check it out. All your favorite characters up on there. And we're on Patreon, patreon.com/Michael Scott. You can become a Scott's
All your favorite characters on coffee mugs. Let's be clear.
Yes, that's right. But join us on Patreon, become a Scott's Tot. It's $5 a month. You get a bonus mailbag episode every month. You get ad-free main feed episodes. You get some bonus content like our second season of the Ted Lasso podcast. And together
we get to vote on character episodes.
You get to vote on character episodes. And together we all make a Thurgood Marshall College Fund donation, which is great. And you support the show. So special thanks to our Patreon members, our Scott's Tots. We love you guys so much.
Helping us serve the mission that Michael Scott could not.
Right. And special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who designs all of our artwork.
Thank you for listening. I heard this about a show that we love, All Fantasy Everything, that the hosts are like your best friends you never met. I think it's a great way to think about a show like yeah. that, like a hangout pod. Yeah. So I hope that we can be that, yeah. and I hope that I'm just glad that you spent some time, hung out with us as we dove back into the Superfan episodes from season four. So just know that we appreciate it. We really love you, and that we'll buy that tin that you cut for 10 cents a yard. But
make that money.
More important than all of that, take care, stay safe, and we'll see you next week.
Bippity poppity, give me the zappity.
Yes, sir.
You're a presentation tool. Da, 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 da,